Welcome to this week's edition of Worst Seats in the House with Michael Russo. I'm Anthony LaPanta. A busy week. We've had the draft. We've had free agency start. And there's a lot to talk about on the Wild front and the National Hockey League front. But, Michael, we got to start with the tragic story in the hockey community in the state of Minnesota with the car accident involving Bob Motzko's son. And Mac was killed in a true tragedy, and just a great family, and I feel so badly for the Motzko family and what they must be dealing with these last few days.
Yeah, my stomach's been tied in knots for a week, and also to Sam Schoenman and his family. I've been reading a lot about his family as well, and him, and his dad Tom is on the board of the Minnesota Special Hockey here in Minnesota as well, because Sam's sister was a participant in that. And yeah, it's just absolutely awful. I can't tell you, Anthony, how many players, coaches, agents I've talked to in the last week that have brought up the incident to me and how this has broken their hearts as well. So, you know, all my best to the Motzkos and the Schoenmans and all the family. I mean, Ella Motzko, the sister, Sam was her boyfriend. So she lost her boyfriend and her brother in this incident. And it's just absolutely terrible. And Mac Motzko was Billy Guerin's son, Liam's billet brother, down in New Mexico, playing juniors last year, and he was heading to Penticton this year. Mac. So I know that Bill Guerin's son is absolutely devastated and crushed as well. So just absolutely tragic incident. I just feel so bad for everybody involved and everybody affected by the accident.
Yeah, I'd had a chance to meet Mac just in passing a couple of times, and just a high quality young man. And I just, every time you hear stories like this,
yeah,
all you think about is the, you know, I read some of the stories, and I don't know all of the details or anything, but like when you hear that, you know, Sam was supposed to leave a day earlier, but decided to stay. And I can't imagine dealing with those kind of questions, like the what if questions, mm-hmm. for the rest of life that those families will have to deal with. And it's just such a tragedy. It's an unbelievable story. And I don't know how to possibly put into words the sorrow that I feel for those two families.
Yeah, the one quote this week that just broke my heart was, you know, Bob Motzko saying, I've lost my hero. I mean, that is just, you know, man, just can't imagine. So just all the best to the families and all the friends and everybody just affected by this. Both boys obviously entrenched in the hockey community. So, I've learned a lot about both boys this week from people that knew them, and just absolutely terrible. A lot has happened, Anthony, since in the hockey world since we last did a podcast. The Wild did they had their NHL entry draft where they added seven new players to the organization, including two first round picks, Jesper Wallstedt and Carson Lambos, a second round pick, Minnesota Mr. Hockey Jack Peart, up from Grand Rapids as well, headed to St. Cloud State. No trades made that day other than potential of moving up. They actually tried to move up into the top 10 twice. Sounds to me, Dan Myers wrote an outstanding article for Wild.com. He was embedded in the Wild War Room. And Scott Burnside from The Athletic was in there for 5 days with The Athletic and wrote a really cool piece too. And what was really neat is that they were both embedded and both wrote really vastly different pieces. The Dan Myers one was interesting because if you read between the lines, the Wild a couple times had a chance to move into the top 10. You know, again, reading between the lines, I've got to think that one of the players that they were eyeballing was Kent Johnson. And then obviously the Columbus Blue Jackets took him at number 5. My gut says the other one that they were eyeballing was Dylan Gunther, because I think the deal that they had made, just reading again between the lines and hearing from my sources that day, it would have been with Arizona. Well, Arizona took Gunther at 9, so my gut says that they wanted the same player there. But then they go down in the draft, and all of a sudden, Kosa, the goalie, Anthony, goes before Wallstedt, which was the goalie that the Wild preferred. And Wallstedt kept on falling, and finally, Jed Brackett's eyes perched up, and it's like, we got to move up and get this kid. And they were really worried the Boston Bruins were going to take him. I found out after the fact the Carolina Hurricanes wanted to move up and try to grab this kid. Well, the Wild move up two spots. trade their third round pick, take Wallstat, who they think could be a franchise goalie, and then take Lambos at 26. So the Wild really feel like they got a couple really good picks that day. Then later in the draft, they did what a lot of teams do in a wide open draft like this, is they went for reaches of players that they really like, maybe guys that weren't drafted as highly, but weren't ranked as highly, but were really high on their list, and they took some reaches, and we'll see if those guys pan out as well.
Well, I find it interesting that, and I read both the articles to which you referred, and the Kent Johnson piece was the same thing that popped into my head as I was reading it, that it sounds like that's the guy that they were talking about without specifically naming him. I didn't read into it the same way you did with the Arizona, but I don't doubt that you're right about that. Excuse me. But the goaltender piece, I think, was interesting because it kind of had the same feel to what they did a year ago, where it just, yeah, it sounded like the guy they wanted. You know, you always hear guys talk about that, oh, this was the guy we were targeting and we couldn't believe he was available. But it sure sounds like in this case, that was the case with Wallstad. And everything that I've read about him since sounds like the Wild aren't the only team that think this guy has a chance to be a franchise number one goaltender. Now, the goaltenders are, for whatever reason, and I don't know what it is, it's got to be the most difficult position in any sport to accurately draft at this point in a guy's career, mm-hmm, or goaltenders in hockey. I mean, more so than pitchers in baseball or anything else. It seems like these guys are harder to tab whose skill set is going to project to a number one goalie in the NHL.
No doubt about it. This kid seems really good. Now, his numbers were really good last year, but I do hear from a lot of people, a lot of my Swedish sources. And when I say Swedish sources, a lot of, you know, to me, a source is somebody in the game. When I say Swedish sources, in this case, I'm talking about other media, which I never include as an actual source. But the people that cover the Swedish Hockey League that I've talked to on Twitter say that his numbers might have been a little inflated by playing for Luleå, because they are a, you know, defensive-oriented team, probably the most defensive-oriented team apparently in Sweden. But this kid is really good. He's big. He's athletic. He's quiet in net. Henrik Lundqvist is somebody that he really fashions his game after, goes to all his model camps and things like that. What's going to be really interesting with him is that obviously he's apparently really close to being sort of, I don't want to know about NHL ready. I sometimes scoff at that when you're talking about an 18-year-old goalie, but definitely maybe North American professional ready. And the problem is that they're one of the top goalies in Sweden, who I'm not even going to try to pronounce his name, has just returned to that team, that same exact team. So the worry from the Wild's perspective is that his development could be a little bit hamstrung this year if he only gets like 15 or 20 games. So I think the Wild are trying to find the kid a new home, either in the Swedish Hockey League or somewhere here in North America. I don't think they put him in Iowa at 18 years old. Even though technically, you know, he could come, because you can put a European teenager from a European teenager that's not playing Canadian hockey, he could play in the AHL under age 20, like the Wild did that with Jonas Brodin once. But I don't think they would do that with a goalie. So they might be looking to find him a Canadian junior league team to play for. But it's going to be interesting what the Wild decide here and if they can help him find a new home, Anthony.
Well, I think that'll be interesting. But, just looking at the two first-round picks in general, it gives you a little bit of an idea of where their organizational needs may have changed. And, you know, let's say that our insinuations are correct and they were trying to trade up to get into the top few picks to pick a center, but then to get a goaltender and then a little bit of a bigger bodied defenseman in the first round, I think that's interesting because, you know, you don't always see teams draft necessarily like, here's what our organization needs, especially in the first round. It's quite often more just a player that you're picking the best player, not necessarily the fit the need. But I think that tells you a little bit about where they feel like this organization needs to have some depth established.
No doubt. They've drafted, what, five or six defensemen now in the last couple drafts. And this Lambos kid looks like he could be a heck of a player. Had a real tough year last year with a serious health issue that he's gotten a complete bill of health. So hopefully he continues to develop. Jack Peart, skilled defenseman, you know, looked really good in that World Junior Model Camp last week, or a showcase in Plymouth, Michigan as well. Heading to St. Cloud State, and I'm not going to pretend to know all the other draft picks that they tick. We'll see how they pan out here. Anthony,
maybe they wanted to get a Grand Rapids guy just so they could entice Alex Goligoski to
come.
Yeah,
I know. Well, you know what's really interesting about that? So I was talking to Goligoski earlier in the week before he signed with him, just to sort of prepare myself on what the deal could look like and just what he thinks about coming to Minnesota. And so I asked him if he knew Jack Purr, and he said, well, actually, his dad, Todd, who was a outstanding hockey player when he was growing up, Todd was his Pee Wee coach in Grand Rapids. And he had a funny line. He said that his father, Dan, who obviously, his parents live still up there, so they've known the Pert family for a long time, and he got to watch Jack a lot more than obviously Alex did growing up. And so he got to watch Jack play hockey. And he said, all my dad does is rave about the kid, and my dad raves about nobody. So, there is a nice enticement there. And obviously let's use that as a segue now, Anthony, to talk about free agent day for the Wild. And there's a lot of things we still want to get to, right? We want to get to Jack Eichel. We want to get to Nick Foligno going to the Bruins. I'd like to get to our thoughts on Parisian Suter. But let's talk about free agency for the Wild. First of all, they get Alex Goligoski, 1 year, $5 million deal. He's sort of the replacement for Ryan Suter. He'll slide right next to Jared Spurgeon. They probably quote unquote overpay him on a 1 year deal. And my thinking is that I bet you that after January 1, if things are working out here, that he would be willing to extend his contract here, a much lower AAV in the maybe $2 million range. But let's say he wanted a 2 year deal, but the Wild, you know, obviously they're not paying him $5 million a year. Say the Wild know that he's a $3.5 million defenseman. Well, they don't want a $3.5 million cap hit on next year's books, because right now the way that their cap crunch is going to be next year. And so I think that there's going to be, if he extends his contract, I could see him re-signing it 2 years. We'll talk about Goligoski in a second, but then the Wild also signed Dmitry Kulikov to a 2 year deal at $2.25 million per, Freddie Goudreau to a 2 year deal at $1.2 million per, and John Merrill to a 1 year deal at $850 per. Let's start with Goligoski. Still at age 36 today, happy birthday, Alex. Alex is a guy that, you know, can move the puck. I talked to his defense partner, Jacob Chychrun, the other day. Absolutely raves about him. One, as a human being, but two, as somebody to play with. He could play the right side if the Wild ever have an injury to Spurgeon or Dumba as well, which is beneficial. But he's also a power play guy. What do you think of the signing with Alex Goligoski, Anthony?
Well, I like it a lot, and I don't know anything about the second year. I mean, technically, you're not allowed to make those kind of deals, mm-hmm. and I don't doubt that teams talk about it. But I mean, that's the whole reason why you're not allowed to do that, is just what you're talking about, so that you get an AAV, and if they're able to make that kind of a deal, it's great for the Wild, because this is the year they have a little bit more cap space, and next year they're tighter, so it. You know, if you, instead of signing a guy to a 2 year, $3.5 million, you get five on the books this year and two next year and achieve that. But let's just assume it's just for the 1 year. I don't think there's much difference at this point in, like, for one season in their careers. I don't know that there's a major difference between a Goligoski and a Suter. I think they're pretty similar players. And I really like the addition. I think he's a, number one, he's a tremendous influence inside the room and a tremendous guy, and that all helps. But on the ice, he plays a little bit more of a rigid game than I think people realize, a little bit like a Suter, where he's not like the big bone-crunching, intimidating defenseman, but just plays a stronger game. And you know, we've had a chance to see him a fair amount over the last couple of years, and I really like the addition. I think he's going to be a good fit in all areas for this club.
Yeah. Freddie Goudreau is somebody that, it's funny when, especially when the Wilds, I don't want to say they signed obscure guys, but, when you sign guys like Kulikov, Goudreau, Merrill, it's not like I could give you a scouting report right off the top of my head. So when, and this happens all the time, when all of a sudden news happens with your team, suddenly you get sort of assessments from all over the map, from different people, media, scouts, all of a sudden. So the Wild signed Kulikov, as you mentioned, and I got a lot of really positive scouts, but Goudreau was the one that players around the league said, you will love this guy. happy-go-lucky, hilarious, like just, you know, sort of happy to be here. And I could already see that when we had him on our we had him on our Zoom call the other day. But you know, he's excellent skater. You know, during that Nashville Predators series that I covered in 2017, the Stanley Cup Final against the Pittsburgh Penguins, Goudreau became a Stanley Cup Final revelation. They throw him in the lineup, and he scores three goals in the final for the Predators, and he became sort of the story. I still remember, him being up in a bunch of press conferences and looking at this guy. I'm like, who the heck is Freddie Goudreau? And it was just this black ace that sort of came up from the Nashville from the Milwaukee Admirals, coached by some guy named Dean Evason. And so we'll see. He could play up and down your lineup. You could play center, you could play wing. I think right now the Wild, actually, I put him at center on my depth chart. I think the way that Sturm ended the season so well at center, I think the Wild would try him at wing and then maybe move him on a strong side to take faceoffs and things like that. We'll see. And then John Merrill is somebody that I've always actually liked. You know what's really funny about John Merrill is Brad Hunt used to always tell me what an incredible guy he was and how brilliant and, awesome quote. And here's a guy that John Merrill was playing over Brad Hunt, and yet Brad Hunt, again, it says a lot about him, Anthony, didn't hold it against him. But if you go on YouTube, John Merrill's a hilarious guy. Some of his banter on the ice. They have some YouTube clips of him just trash-talking Victor Hedman, and it's really, really funny. So we'll see what he could add to the team, too. I do like him as a player.
Yeah, I don't know a ton about Freddie Gaudreau, to be honest with you. I mean, I've never been a guy that I've even really ever noticed when the Wild have seen them or played them. And I mean, all of the things you say might be true, but I don't think that's I really expected that there would be a one bigger name type addition to the Wild forward group in the free agency period, and I got the sense that. That there were probably, and Foligno might have been the guy, but I know I read some of your speculation heading into it it seemed like that might have been one of the guy that the Wild were targeting, and it just had the feel to me like that there was somebody else Billy thought he was going to get early in the day and didn't, and then had to move on to some of these other guys to target. And you know, Kulikov's been a guy with a little bit of upside throughout his career, and I'm assuming that right now they've got him slotted in as a number five defenseman. And Merrill, you know, I thought he was a solid player, not spectacular, but a solid player. And you know, with all of this, what I think all of this is going to come down to is how fast the guys within the organization that the prospect type guys, how fast they're ready to step in. And this maybe this opens the door for some of the forwards to have a better shot at a sooner date than originally planned. But didn't you get the feel like there was probably a different plan that the Wild went into the day expecting to unfold? I don't want to use the word settled, but I think they had to move on to plan B.
I'll get to that in a second. By the way, one reason why you haven't noticed Freddie Gaudreau is because he's only played two NHL games against the Wild. So I just looked that up when you were talking.
Yeah, and I mean, and I've seen Nashville play some other games not noticed him too. But I mean, when he's played against the Wild, it's usually been in a fourth line role, and that might be his role here. I mean, I would expect that to be the role here. But and he might be a better player. You know, so many times there are guys who know more about these guys, and Dean would be the guy in this case because he would have coached him and seen him. So I don't doubt they've got a better idea on his skill set than I do. I'm just saying it. I think the whole day had a feel of. They had a different plan and then had to move on.
I do think they had a different plan, but I get the impression that they were tied to Nick Foligno, and if it wasn't Nick Foligno, it wasn't going to be anybody. Now, I don't know if they lost any players throughout the day. My gut says that the price point that they were looking and the role they were looking to put Nick Foligno in, they actually probably didn't lose out. I think I think what happened is they on the blue line did have to start to scramble. I don't think there's any doubt about that. I think that they had always thought that they were going to sign somebody like Bogosian in the 850 range at right D, and then they were going to go try to circle back on a guy like Ian Cole. But what happened is the day turned out to be unbelievable, and a lot of this is because of the price points that the Wild have created a market for guys like Brodin and Spurgeon even, but the price for defensemen the other day was astronomical. Like there was no bargain shopping. When Alex Edler is getting 3.5 and Goligoski is getting 5 and Jake McCabe's getting 4, Like the Wild wanted originally to put Jake McCabe at number 5D, I think. And then all of a sudden when he's getting 4x4, that's not the number that they had slotted in there. They couldn't go that term. But then guys like Travis Hamonic were getting over 3. Mikey Riley's getting 3. Derek Forbert's getting 3. So what happened is they wanted to go back to Ian Cole, but they were so tied into Foligno, and he played it by the book that day. He took 3-4 hours to make a decision, maybe even a little longer. He was actually taking calls, and because they were waiting and waiting and waiting and then lost out on him, then what they did is they tried to reallocate funds to their blue line, and Ian Cole was gone. And the shame of that is that if Nick Foligno had said no 2-3 hours before, I bet you the Wild could have gotten Ian Cole at between 2-5 and 2-9, probably even less than he took in Carolina. That's the way I understand it from talking to people close to Cole. And so then all of a sudden they're looking at Ryan Murray. They're looking at Hakanpaa to put on the right to put on their third pair. They're looking at Kulikov. They're looking at Merrill, people like that. And so Kulikov took the 2-year deal at 2.25. And then by that point, you're now really at thin ice. You're looking at John Merrill, at Sammy Vatanen, Hakanpaa. I bet you that they went after Hakanpaa, but I bet you the term was an issue there. Because the 1.5 is pretty reasonable that he got in Dallas, but I bet you that the term and the lore of playing with a bunch of Finns down there made him go there. So I think the plan B isn't that they lost out on forwards. I think that they tied themselves to Nick Foligno so long that then when they lost out on Nick, they were really scrambling for their number 5 and 6D. That's the way you just read the tea leaves there. And just also being in the building, like we were there for a Goligoski and a Goudreau press conference. But then we didn't get Billy Guerin for 2.5 hours later, and they hadn't signed a 5th or 6th D yet. Then all of a sudden at 8:30 at night, they signed Kulikov. So you just know that was sort of on the bottom of their depth chart. And then the next day they signed John Merrill. So I do think that they did not get their near their first or second choices at the 5th and 6th D.
Yeah, no, and that's exactly what I was saying, is that I think they were all day, they were holding cash aside on the forward side, and therefore had to make an adjustment on the back end, and not necessarily. And I agree with you. I thought the whole day the thing that surprised me more than anything else was what the price tag was for middle, or I want to say bottom tier, but for sure middle of the road defenseman. Yeah. We're not talking about Norris candidates here. Yeah. And yet they were all getting paid more than what I would have expected that the market was going to dictate. And I think that's just the way the day unfolded. Yeah. And it's funny just because
crazy. Defenseman or
and it can happen fast.
Yeah.
All of a sudden you're sitting there and I'm sure you're thinking, okay, we want this money to be set aside for this guy, and we're waiting to hear. And all of a sudden, okay, that guy just disappeared. Yep. Well, we got to move on quickly.
Yep. And Billy basically said that. He goes, when you're watching it all unfold, you think maybe I should be doing more. But I think the Wild were a little hamstrung by the Nick Foligno thing. And that's nothing against – he should take his decision. This is a big decision for him. And we can talk about that in a second. I will say this before I tell everybody about Profile, Anthony, is that I did call an agent the other day just to show you how it was a bad day to bargain shop. I called an agent that represents, in my eyes, a very marginal defenseman. And I said, hey, any chance the Wild are in on this guy? And he goes, no, way too expensive for the Wild. And my mouth almost dropped. I'm like, what? if that is too expensive for the Wild. And I'll tell you, that price came in for the contract he got. And I just cannot believe what the price are for marginal defensemen in today's game. But I did want to tell everybody about a great deal for my friends at Profile. Now through the month of August, Profile is having its best offer of the year sale. This only happens once a year. So there's no better time to lose weight and focus on your health. And now you can do it for even less. Profile has a variety of plans to fit any budget, and it really, really works. Trust me, I've lost a ton of weight and I feel great and I'm keeping it off. Profile has helped me and they can help you too. Contact Profile for free, no obligation consultation. There are 6 locally owned metro locations, as well as Mankato and St. Cloud and Rochester. Visit profileplan.com. /TwinCities for more details. And don't forget to tell them that Russo sent you. Again, that's profileplan.com/TwinCities. And here's word from Minnesota Propane Association.
Hi, I'm Laura Shera. And did you know that a propane gas furnace lifespan averages 20 years, while electric heat pumps only last 14 years? And propane furnaces work in all temperatures while delivering warm and consistent heat to your home. Why buy two heating systems when one propane furnace can do it all? It lasts longer, works better, and it costs less. These things and more are done with propane today. The right energy right now.
Chris Lindahl told me that people should feel a lot more confident in putting their home on the market this summer. That's because Chris Lindahl Real Estate's Guaranteed Offer Program gives you confidence that you're getting great value, that the experience will be incredibly convenient, and that you'll be able to bid on homes that other buyers can't even see. With Chris Lindahl Real Estate, you get market rate value for your home, 90 full days to close, and access to off-market inventory. Call Chris Lindahl Real Estate today at 763-401-SOLD or go to chrislindahl.com to request a no-obligation guaranteed offer on your home. All right, Anthony, Nick Foligno, you know, as you saw the day before, I did a huge story on Nick and Marcus. But the one thing that Nick made very clear in that story is as much as he wanted to play with Marcus and it would be a dream to play with Marcus, he was going into it open-minded, and that he was laughing at just these reports that he was just absolutely going to be postmarked for Minnesota. He said that Minnesota was nearer at the top of his list, but he was going to listen and try to find the best fit for him and his family. And at the end of the day, there was a tug of war between Minnesota, Colorado, and Boston. When you look, my gut says the Wild were offering him 2x2.5. He signed for 2x3.8. So right away, if the Wild didn't go over the 2.5, that's $1.3 million more per year at the end of his career. I don't behoove him from taking that. The Boston Bruins, I think, are considered a much bigger cup contender than the Wild. But the other interesting thing here is that his daughter, when she was an infant, had congenital heart defects and needed major surgery at the Boston Children's Hospital. And in his eyes, that hospital saved his daughter's life. He's donated lots and lots of money to the children, to the different hospitals there in Boston. And I think that connection really tugged at his heartstring. That's the way that it was explained to me by his side. So it's unfortunate the Wild lost him. But all the power to him to go there. And now Marcus is going to have to come here and explain to Billy Guerin why he couldn't get his brother here.
Well, and I mean, I think the one point you made there that I thought was interesting, and I read your article the day before, and I just kind of assumed the same thing, where it was, all right, well, this sure makes it sound like that this might be a done deal. But the fact that, you know, he waited until the free agent day to have these conversations, that he seems to be the one guy who played it by the letter of the NHL rulebook.
Everybody else, it's like if you ain't tampering, you ain't trying. I mean, there is no doubt that every team in the league, like every team, was doing stuff before. They got rid of this interview period and everybody was doing it. And Nick Foligno refused, which also says so much about him as a person, right? Like, it doesn't, right. Like, you know, the Foligno integrity, right? It's like he made it very clear, nope, I'm going to be fielding phone calls. And I even said to him in that interview that I had with him the day before, like, are you worried that you're going to cost other teams players? And he said, yeah, you think about that, but I'm going to make the decision for me. And I do think that he did cost some teams some players. There's no doubt. I mean, Toronto, Minnesota, they weren't the only ones. It wasn't the only with Wild. So,
yeah, and I think the he probably will be a great fit in Boston. And all the family stuff to which you referred aside, I mean, it's – who wouldn't want to go and play there right now? They've got a core of a team that looks like it's going to contend and a spot in a lineup that looks like it fits for him. And, you know, I mean, I do have a ton of respect for that family. I mean, we both do. It's been incredible to get to know Marcus a little bit and everything and everybody that we've talked to in Columbus over the last few years since getting to know Marcus as well as we have. When then you go and talk to his brother, it's, you know, you got a couple guys. There's a reason why this family is looked at as captain type humans, and Nick is certainly that. I'm happy for him, and would have been nice to see him in Minnesota. But yeah, I think it's hard to look at a guy and say and question why he would have made a decision that he made.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Before we move on to Jack Eichel, let's just talk briefly. Obviously, we talked a lot on the podcast after Ryan Suter and Zach Parise were bought out, so we don't need to rehash all that. But Ryan Suter gets a 4-year deal times $3.65 million per in Dallas. I think the 4-year deal and that lure drew him there. He had a lot of interest, Anthony, and it's going to be interesting to see him on that ice and that those colors play the Wild, 4 or 5 times a season, in that building where he had that major broken ankle and was it tibia or fibula? I can't remember. Sustained there with 5 games left in the 2018 season. What do you think of Ryan Suter going to Dallas?
Well, I think that was a I mean, Dallas was one of the teams that right from the start we started talking about it, and it just seemed like a fit in like a Dallas, a St. Louis, a Chicago, somewhere like that. You just
Colorado.
Kind of had a feel that he would end up being a guy that the Wild would end up having to play against 5 times a year. It just seemed like it was destiny that was going to happen. I think the deal is almost exactly what we immediately had guessed. Like somebody's going to sign him to a 4-year deal, and where I'm sure I think we all felt Suter still had, even though he wasn't, and I don't want to say this in a way that he wasn't the same player he had been earlier in his contract, but he was still for certain a top four defenseman for the next couple of years at minimum, maybe for all 4 years of this deal. He a step slower perhaps, but a guy that he continues to maximize his skill set on the ice. And I'm sure he's going to be a good fit in Dallas, and there are going to be times where Wild fans look at him and say he's better than what we have and we should have still had him on our roster. But that those days are that ship has sailed, so to speak. And I think there's a good fit for Ryan. And I'm happy for him, and I hope it works out well for him. And he was a really good player for the Minnesota Wild and a franchise-changing player. And this tells you that there were a lot of teams out there that still felt he had a lot to offer.
Yeah, and Zach Parise is going to the Islanders. That deal's not announced. So the way the Islanders did this last summer too, I don't know if Wild fans or last offseason, because it was really last autumn, last fall. The way that the Islanders do this because of their LTI situation and something to do with Johnny Boychuk, I don't know, is that essentially Lou Lamoriello doesn't file any contracts with the league until like as late as possible in the summer. So right now, the word is on the street that Kyle Palmieri has re-signed with the Islanders, that Zach Parise has signed with the Islanders, that Casey Cizikas has re-signed with the Islanders, and maybe even Travis Ajak. But we don't know because the Islanders are the only team that just, it's the Lou Lamoriello way. It doesn't announce their deals on free agency. So, there are some people like I had an actual GM from another team call me yesterday to start like doing due diligence on Zach Parise because he hadn't signed yet. And I'm like, I think that you might
I
want to
think you're
check.
late.
Yeah, I think
Yeah.
you're late to the party. But he just assumed that he was still a free agent. And when I say GM, actually, I meant AGM, but assistant GM. But anyway, it's just not, the way that I understand it is that he's made his deal. So, the one
And
thing
that
I did
was
want to
also
clarify that you
really predicted, right? I mean, we figured
Yeah.
this is almost exactly like we thought, where we had
Yeah.
said Suter will get a 4-year deal. He'll have multiple teams that come after him, and Zach will probably sign a 1-year
Yep.
and that
Now
has
he did,
some
I don't know what
significant.
The way that I understand it, I don't know what he chose is Anthony, is he had options. That Lou said basically you got choice of this 1-year deal, this 2-year deal, this 3-year deal at vastly different numbers, and then he was going to make his decision. So I don't know what he wound up deciding.
And at that age, they can, because of his age, he's able to sign deals that have incentives in them.
Yep. The
And my
1-year deal
guess would
can have
be,
an incentive.
right. And my
Yep.
guess would be that that may be the way you go, because if you
Yeah.
really believe you have that you still have a lot to offer, you sign that. It's a friendlier deal for both the player and the team. And now all of a sudden, you might put yourself in a spot where next year you can go out and get another deal like it, or a 2-year deal that is at a better value than, I mean, I'm sure right now, based on the way his time in Minnesota ended, it might not have been the best time to be out trying to sell yourself.
No doubt.
And that can change with one good season.
No doubt about it. And the one thing I did want to clarify is that the Wild, you know, like we're all talking about these buyouts and how they're limiting the Wild's flexibility the next, 4 years. But the reality is that the Wild were hamstrung before with them as well. In fact, the Wild, you know, technically created more flexibility. They just don't have those players anymore. But, you know, they created, what, 10 point something million of flexibility this year, next year, 2 point something million, and the year after about one point something million. And then obviously they're going to have dead cap space the 4 years after of 4.6 of 1.6 total for the next 4 years after that. But the reality is that the Wild before buying out Parisian Suter would not have been able to go out and sign a bunch of guys to long-term deals. And the thing that the buyouts do that I do want Wild fans to understand is that, let's just say the Wild were able to trade Parisi to Arizona and have them buy him out. The cap recapture then kicks in right there. So if Parisi in the next 4 years retires prematurely, the Wild gets slammed with these cap recapture penalties. Same thing if this summer or next summer, Billy Guerin basically had a good sit down with Ryan Suter and said, waive your no move, we'll retain half your salary and we'll trade you to whatever, Dallas, Chicago, whatever. Same thing, the cap recapture kicks in, and if he retired prematurely, the Wild get hit. The problem with that is if then they do retire prematurely, but in that time, the Wild were conducting business as usual and spending the cap and re-signing Kaprizov to $9 million deals and Fiala to $8 million or traded for Eichel or this guy or that guy, if all of a sudden they're slammed with a cap recapture that they didn't know, they would then have to get cap compliant by trading a bunch of guys to get under the cap. And so what this did is create just a wee bit more cap room and let the Wild know exactly what the pain is going to be the next 4 years. So the only difference here is that they don't have the two players, but they're getting hit with this. So does that make sense, Anthony?
Yeah, well, yes, it does. And that's, I mean, it's well explained. I mean, the bottom line is it's not like when you buy these guys out that you get penalized. You get to actually spread it out. But it's the killer is that you've got this money into players that aren't actually playing.
Right, exactly. And so that's the big issue. But I just wanted to clarify that because I feel like my first story probably didn't do that well enough, which is why I came back yesterday to just clarify it. Before, and I want to get to some Twitter questions, Anthony, but Jack Eichel. So right now the Wild have completely backed out of trade talks, according to sources. They are beyond fed up with the asking price of Jack Eichel. In terms of assets, and the fact they can't afford it. And look, I mean, you know, the Wild have Buffalo Sabres are in a position where they want only futures. And the reason why is, and we saw it on free agency day. Like did you see the crummy players the Sabres were signed? Nobody wants to play there. So they don't want to, it sounds like something like, all right, you trade Kevin Fiala in a Jack Eichel deal. But the way I understand it is that they don't want Fiala because they know that they're probably not going to be able to get Fiala to sign their long term. Same thing, like say it was Kaprizov in the deal. You think Buffalo could get Kaprizov to sign long term if Kaprizov's not even willing to sign long term in Minnesota? No. So what they want is they want the Rossies and the Boldies and firsts and prospects. But the problem is from a Wild perspective, they'd have to give that all up in the Buffalo deal, but then they'd have to figure out a way to unload a Dumba and a Greenway or a Fiala in another deal. And unless Buffalo is going to retain money. So the Wild just cannot make it work right now. And so until, they back off or lower their asking price to Buffalo Sabres, I don't think the Wild could satisfy them. And so right now they're currently out. But if there ever comes a point where Buffalo is willing to say to them, all right, you know what, this is what we'll do now, or they work together to find a third team that could take some money, then maybe Minnesota can get in. But right now I just don't see the fit. And from what I'm hearing from Wild sources is that they are out. And, no, they could go back in, but we don't know.
Well, I got to believe everybody's out. I mean, if the asking price has stayed as ridiculous as it is and has been, and if these deals, I mean, the Wild aren't the only ones that would be almost that. There's almost no way they can make a dollar for dollar trade work. If Buffalo really was going to make this deal, the time to have made it was before free agency started, because that's when teams still had some flexibility. Now try and make a deal where you have to match it when everybody just about every team in the league right now is tight up against the cap, or has very little flexibility. I mean, there's almost no way now that this deal could get made. And I just think if you're Buffalo, you had an asset that would have intrigued a lot of teams, and you probably priced yourself into a spot where, I mean, if they were looking for four assets, could they have gotten three from some teams? Very likely. But if you, at some point, you just have to say, okay, look, the guy's not worth as much as we thought he was worth, because we've had zero teams willing to match what we're asking. I mean, at some point, you got to say, all right, maybe our calibrations were off here.
Yep. No doubt. And I think now it's going to be interesting to watch this drama unfold. If Eichel's got to go back there, he still wants to have the major neck surgery. They want him to have the lesser of the two, and he hasn't done it. That's the other thing from a Billy Guerin perspective, which is why I was so surprised that he was so entrenched in this, is that Jack Eichel needs surgery. It doesn't matter that he's skating right now. By all accounts, he still needs surgery. So if you give up a boatload of assets for Jack Eichel, we might not even see him until January. And like, to me, it's like, let him get the surgery there. Let him see if he could be the same player there. And then you try to revisit this. So if I'm Buffalo, I hold on to him, which is why I think Kevin Adams has been so outspoken lately, that he's just saying, you know, we have the asset, you're coming back. So we'll see how this all comes about. Anthony, let's go through some Twitter questions, because I think that also get us to some subjects that we haven't. And then, you know, before we end the podcast, I want to go through the depth chart and maybe talk about some other teams here in the next, you know, in our final minutes of the show. I will say this, you know, now that I brought that up, was there any one team that really impressed you with their moves that they made that day? You know, the one team that I will say I thought did a really quality job is right north of us. I thought the Winnipeg Jets, you know, they added – it is, you know, Winnipeg's in a lot of ways like Buffalo. It's hard to get free agents to go and commit there. So they always have to find players that don't have no trade clause, that have term on their contract, that want to play there. And they find two really quality defensemen in Brendan Dillon. And then the next day they go and take advantage of a Vancouver Canucks team with a really quality Nate Schmidt, who is under a very, very lucrative contract, 5 years, 4 years left at $5.9 million, that just wanted out of Vancouver. And by the way, what does that say about the Vancouver Canucks? No offense, Winnipeg, that you could be playing for that organization and actually waive your no move clause to go to Winnipeg. There are some major problems going on in Vancouver right now that they better figure out, because it's been a you know, the word on the street is that players are starting to get not like the way that the organization is run. And I think a perfect example is Nate Schmidt wanting to get the heck out of there after 1 year. When we all know what type of guy Nate Schmidt is, and the fact that he's just like, get me out of here, and I'll go to Winnipeg to do that, I think it says something.
Yeah, and I think the Winnipeg thing is intriguing, because I did like their moves. Vancouver, it seemed, was strange. I thought some of the moves that Philadelphia made were kind of strange.
Yeah, like Keith Yandel.
Yeah, that
it's
one
cheap, but he's a. You know, he's not the same player he used to be.
No. I thought Chicago had made a couple of good moves. And, you know, I don't think they're necessarily as far away. I mean, the addition of Tyler Johnson in the trade that I know was basically just a salary dump for Tampa. But for them to take Seabrook's contract off of their books and replace him with Tyler Johnson, who's a pretty good player. McCabe's a solid player, a solid addition there. And you know, I kind of liked what Chicago did. Yeah. And then of course, with all of it, their big thing is it sounds like the addition of Jonathan Toews back to their roster from a year ago. You know, it wouldn't surprise me if Chicago made a significant jump from where they've been the last couple of years. I thought they were solid. Dallas, you know, the Suter deal was a part of it, but they added, what, four different guys? I mean, I think their additions were solid as well. So there are a few teams that I think.
How about Seattle? Seattle turning the goalie market upside down by signing Grubauer to that giant contract. And then all of a sudden, Colorado absolutely scrambled and gave up a ridiculous package for Darcy Kemper. So they, you know, essentially Toronto and Carolina trading goalies, right? Mrazek goes to Toronto.
Right.
Good luck with that. And Freddie Anderson and Ranton now go to Carolina. How about Seattle Kraken, though? Jaden Schwartz, Grubauer, and Alex Wennberg. Not bad first free agency, because that's one thing, if you remember, that Vegas didn't do. Vegas built their team totally through the expansion draft and picking up prospects and things like that. They really didn't dip into free agency. Maybe I think Brad Hunt was a free agent pickup. Maybe even John Merrill, if I remember. Seattle went with the kind of like no frills for expansion draft, and then they go out and just hit some home runs in free agency. It's pretty impressive.
Yeah, what Vegas did, if you remember, though, was they piled up some assets.
Yep.
Through the expansion draft, and then made a couple significant trades.
Yeah, Pacioretty, Mark Stone.
Correct. And the Pacioretty trade, I thought, was kind of the first one that set the tone, where they traded away Suzuki, their first draft pick, and a couple of other prospects, because they had so many of them. They were able to then, so in a way, it almost felt like a free agent addition by adding the veteran guys in Pacioretty and Stone. Seattle was significant with Grubauer. I didn't think the deal that Colorado made to get Darcy Kemper was that, I don't think it was as ridiculous a package. And when you think about it, if you're Colorado and you've got the rest of your roster poised to make a run, giving away a number one pick to bring Kemper in, I don't think is that outlandish, especially when you consider, you know, that number one is likely to be 28, 29, 30 in the first round. It's not like you're trading away a pick that might be in the top 10 picks.
I will say, to me, I agree with you on the first round pick, but Connor Timmins is going to be a heck of a defenseman, I think.
Defenseman they have.
Yeah.
Who's he going to supplant for Colorado on the blue line?
Yeah,
he might be a good player, but he's not. I just don't think, when you're in a spot like Colorado, I didn't think the package was too much to get Kemper. I mean, I don't doubt for a minute that their preference would have been to make a deal with Grubauer. But once Grubauer signed elsewhere, if I'm Colorado right now, I'm like, hey, we make a deal, and if you have to slightly overpay for what in a deal, so be it. I just didn't think the deal was that far out of whack.
Yep. By the way, I went outside yesterday. I took a deep breath and inhaled like the entire forest of like the Western United States. And it feels like it's that time of year again, hot, humid July weather. And that means we, especially in the smoky times, need to stay hydrated during these hot summer months. I get my drinking water from Connecticut K5 drinking water system. It provides me with the refreshing, high-quality drinking water right from my sink and refrigerator. The Kinetico drinking water system is the most advanced reverse osmosis system ever, removing more contaminants than any other system and can produce more than 40 gallons of water a day. My recommendation? Ask my friends over at Aquarius Home Services Kinetico for a free water analysis. They're just a click away at AquariusHomeServices.com. And don't forget to mention that Russo sent you. Anthony, tell us about Kowalski's.
Well, it's the place to go if you're looking for the best ingredients for a great meal. And it's where I go for any time we're putting together a Sunday dinner or a dinner on the patio. And we had a couple of great nights this last weekend. It was our annual Donkey Classic golf tournament. So we had a big crew over here for a pasta feed on Friday night, went with the family favorite, the vodka cream sauce. And no matter what we're making, I love stopping by Kowalski's to check it out. And, you know, whether it's you're going to pick up your steaks or seafood, or even just to grab some marinated chicken breasts or something, they've got them. And as I've told you before, the best part is, you know, chat with the guys behind the counter there. They're knowledgeable. They'll have some ideas for you. They have recipe cards for you if you're looking for a way to try to prepare something. Just talk to them about it. They can help you out anytime that you're sitting down, you've got great company coming over, or just want to make a great meal, you got to start with the best ingredients. And for that, I always stop at Kowalski's.
And here's a word from our friend Jerry Bosch.
Jerry Bosch here from Bosch Law Firm and WorkCompExperts.com. If you've been injured at work, Call us. Even if the insurer is paying your claim, we'd be happy to discuss your situation to make sure you're being paid all the appropriate benefits. I can guarantee you that the insurance company is not telling you everything you need to know to maximize the value of your claims and protect your future. The call is always free and there's never a fee unless we win benefits on your behalf, and we service clients all over the state of hockey. So please call the WorkComp experts at Bosch Law Firm, 651-333-8300, or find us at workcompexperts.com.
Back here, Worst Seats in the House, Michael Russo, Anthony LaPanta, final 10 or 15 minutes of the show. Let's breeze through some Twitter questions, Anthony. Marco Rossi's Stan account has, do you see Victor Rask in the lineup at the start of the year? Does he bounce in the press box or a trade? I mean, look, I see him in the lineup, right? I mean, the Wild, Anthony and I have talked about this a lot. I mean, the Wild seem to have a lot greater belief in him than obviously I've shown to have. But look, he played all the time last year between Kaprizov and Zuccarello. I would hope that the Wild would still upgrade up the middle at some point this offseason. But right now, I mean, I don't see why Victor Rask with the Wild center depth wouldn't be in the lineup. And the question is, does he start with that same tandem, or does maybe Eriksson Ek get a look there in training camp, Anthony?
I think both. I think Eriksson Ek gets a look there, but I really think that the biggest questions heading into this year's camp for the Wild is, do the young guys come up and demand a job and command a role, a spot in the top 12 for forwards? And I think, you know, Billy's made it clear that it's not a given that these guys are going to be in, but with the way things unfolded in the trade market and free agency, I think the door is open for them to come in and demand and command a job, but they're going to have to do just that. I mean, if they don't blow people away in training camp and exhibition games, then I'm sure Billy's content to say, nope, you're going to start in Iowa and we'll see what happens. And if that is the case, Victor Rask for sure is in the lineup. But I would be shocked if Rask's not in the opening night lineup for Minnesota. I would not be shocked if guys like Rossi and Boldy earn a spot there, but I don't think it's a given.
Yeah, like right now I look at their lineup, and if they don't bring anybody else in, or they sign some guys to tryouts, which is actually something that Billy does not like to do. He's told me that before, but maybe this year will change things. To me, if I was Guerin and there were some forwards, and we could actually really quickly go through some of the forwards left. But right now, let's just say it's last year's lines. It would be Kaprizov, Rask, Zuccarello, Greenway, Eriksson Ek, Foligno. Right now, that third line would be Hartman at center, if he stays there, and Kevin Fiala on the right side. There's a hole there at left wing. That's where Nick Foligno is going to slot in. On the fourth line, you have either Sturm / Gaudreau or Gaudreau / Sturm with Bukestad. Then obviously there's a 13th forward position. So right now there is a spot for Matt Boldy if he earns it out of training camp. The question is, does Billy sort of be patient here and look at some of these free agent forwards out there and say, all right, maybe wait a week or two where they're really nervous and can't get a job and they're willing to come here for less money? Or does he, you know, try to make a trade, or does he just leave these roles open? Marco Rossi, Matt Boldy, Connor Durr, Brandon Duhame yesterday, who got a two-way / one-way contract, which means the Wild think he's close. These are the guys that are going to be vying for roster spots. But let's go through free agents forwards list, Anthony. Any of these guys intrigue you? Krejci at 35 years old, David Krejci. My gut says he's going back to Boston, or he's going to go back to the Czech Republic. Would that intrigue you if his price was reasonable? Again, the Wild knowing that they only have, if you're including Fiala and Kaprizov, eventual re-signings, they probably only have $4 million to spend, maybe even less. Is Krejci coming here at that price? I doubt it.
I doubt he'd come here, but he for sure would intrigue me. The guy's got a lot left, and I'd love to have him. I just can't imagine that's going to fit in the Wild's budget.
Yeah. Thomas Tatar. He has the left wing.
Not as much.
Yeah. Tatar to Fiala doesn't. Yeah. What do you think of Nick Ritchie?
Kind of the same. I mean, with all these guys.
He's got bite. 15 goals in 56 games last year. I know he doesn't do much for me either.
No, but this is what's left in the market. So, you know, he probably does more than some of the prospect guys other than Rossi and Boldy. I mean, we're always considering like, well, what's the trade-off? I mean, if Rossi or Boldy are ready to play and ready to step in, you know, now your needs are a little bit different. But if you're looking for just a veteran guy for 1 year, I mean, there's none of these guys that are going to do as much for you as David Krejci, but I just don't, you know, I don't know what the price tag is right now. And I'm sure I don't know the guy at all, but if you're him with what your career run has been, I would imagine probably willing to take less to stay in Boston than to go somewhere else.
Yeah. When I look at these names, I say, give the job to Boldy. Krejci, Tatar, Nick Ritchie, you know, Donato's obviously they're not bringing him back. Dirk Brassard, Tyler Bozak, Carl Soderberg, Alex Chason, Dominic Kahan, Marcus Johansson, Bobby Ryan, Alex Galchenyuk, Riley Sheahan, Mikhail Gregorenko. I mean, this is James Neal, Nikita Gusev. I mean, they are bottom of the barrel here. So if I were them, I'd be super patient. Try to either scour the market or just, you know, just have a competition in camp. At some point, you know, these young entry-level guys have to play. And you just burnt a year for Matt Boldy. You know, he showed he could play in Iowa. Give the kid a chance. Why block him out with some $800,000 35-year-old that you're getting to come in here, you know?
Well, you know, I mean, I think with a lot of these guys, I don't know that you'd be blocking them out but I don't think some time in the American Hockey League I think benefits all these guys, and it wouldn't be the worst thing in the world if you brought in a veteran guy. If you're some of these guys you're talking about, let's say a Tyler Bozak type guy, and you bring him in, and you know, it isn't like you're going to be saying, hey, look, Matt Boldy, you no longer have upward mobility because Tyler Bozak's here. But I don't think it would be the worst thing in the world to have those guys start out in Iowa and see how the season is going. And if a half a year down there might not be the worst thing for their development and their growth as a player. All these guys, I mean, there's some guys in that list that you mentioned that, you know, they wouldn't be a bad depth guy. But at the same time, I mean, you might as well just wait and see what else presents itself before you tie yourself and lock yourself in to one of those guys. You know, we didn't really talk about it, but how about some of the deals that a few of those other former Wild guys signed? Like Eric Hall landing in Boston was interesting. Mikhail Granlund getting the deal he got to stay in Nashville, I thought was a tremendous deal for Granlund.
Yeah, especially since like 5 minutes before the deal happened, Todd Diamond, his agent, like just sort of ripped them publicly about how enough they couldn't get even a reasonable offer from Nashville. And that happened, if you remember, last year too. All of a sudden, like Todd Diamond came out, and next thing you know, he re-signs in Nashville. So Toronto was trying to get Granley. Anybody else? Bonino goes to San Jose. Brad Hunt goes to Vancouver. Anybody else that we saw former Wild players get jobs? I can't remember.
Not that I can think of. Those were the ones that surprised me the most. The Hall to Boston one. I mean, it's not an egregious dollar amount or anything. It just, I wouldn't have thought of Eric Halla being the type of guy Boston was trying to find. But
yeah, Jerry Mayhew signed two-way deal with the Flyers. Brad Hunt, we mentioned. Ian Cole going to Carolina. Brandon Minnell traded to Toronto. That's pretty much about it as former Wild players. Yep. Brian Donato still doesn't have a job, I don't think.
I don't think he does.
Yeah. Last couple Twitter questions. Somebody asked Kevin, and this will get us on the Kaprizov talk of it. When Zach Werenski at age 24 gets a huge contract today, does that? Don't you think the Wild have to offer Kaprizov at least as much? No. First of all, he signed a 6-year deal at 9.5. Werenski's been in the league as a superstar defenseman for 5 years, 6 years. Kaprizov for one. But no, I'm sorry. Like the Wild are offering the kid $9 million. That's enough. He's played 55 games. To sit there and start, you know, here's 9.6 because Werenski just signed it. No, Braden Point just got 9.5 and he's an absolute star for a long time with multiple cups. If that's good enough for him, why is it not good enough for Kaprizov? like there's going to come a point where Billy Guerin just absolutely pulls everything. You know, to me at this point, it's I'm at that point where it's like take it or leave it. 5 times 8, 5 times 9. If he continues to play this game, it's like, all right, you know what? Enjoy Russia.
I think Billy's going to do that. I really do. And I think I love that. And I agree with you. You've made more than a fair offer to the young man. You're offering him $72 million. It's not like you're saying, hey, look, here's 8 years at $4 million a year, take it or leave it. I mean, all right, well, go play in the KHL.
Yep. And out of principle, I don't offer the 3-year deal ever now. Like to me, somebody asked here, would you rather Kaprizov for 3 than for 0 or 3? I'd say 0. Like out of principle, when a guy is playing this game and almost like showing you that he's willing to leave here in 3 years, if he's willing to play this game now, I don't give him a 3-year deal where now for the next 3 years, I got to sit there and worry about him either leaving or trying to re-sign him or potentially trading him. Like, let me just promise you a 3-year deal, even though it's fun and think, all right, at least we have him for 3 more years. They're eventually when would have to trade him. So he's not lasting the 3 years. Like to me, if he's not willing to take a 5-year deal times 8 or as max 9, which remember a 5-year deal at 9, you're going to have to negotiate off of in 5 years. You know, I just think like enough is enough here. I don't want to sit there and bury this kid because he's a great kid and I'm sure he's letting his agent do the work here. But there's also got to come a point that you got to say, you know what, this is ridiculous. I've made this organization and this fan base wait 5.5 years for me, and now I'm pulling this after a half a season. You know, I find it supremely distasteful. And, you know, hopefully that's what Kaprizov's saying to his agent right now in Moscow. Get this done. Enough is enough. You know, this is being agent driven, in my opinion, and it's just not the right thing. It's just making the kid look poorly. So that's just my opinion.
I agree.
Yep.
Couldn't agree more.
Yep. Any other topics you want to get to? Let me just quickly skim. Somebody did ask, what's your routine on a Twins day? Like, do you have twins today?
I do. A podcast just is not in my normal routine, but it's much different than a wild game day for sure. And, you know, it's different depending on if it's a home game or road game. But the difference with baseball compared to hockey is that batting practice is very different from morning skate because batting practice takes place in the afternoon. So, you know, we have a conference call just like we do for a hockey game for a twin show, but for hockey, you're at the rink for morning skate. You take the call there, update, you know, kind of your ideas and thoughts and lines and game charts and all that kind of stuff. And then on a hockey game day, I go to the gym, get a workout in, and basically turn around and go back to the rink. For baseball, you only go to the ballpark once because batting practice takes place at 4 o'clock in the afternoon or 4:30 in the afternoon. So it's much different where we have our call in the morning, but then you have a pretty good break in the day. So, you know, there have been a few game days this year where I've gone and played a round of golf in the morning and then go to the ballpark at 4 o'clock. And, you know, now we're allowed access on the field, which is significant because it's been since pre-COVID before that happened. So that's encouraging to me because it leads me to believe maybe we'll be back to normal for the hockey season with the kind of access we used to have at morning skate. But you go down, watch batting practice. We don't have our media dinners yet, which is a big part of life for hockey as well, where we normally would then go meet our crew at 5 o'clock and sit in the dining room and have some dinner, talk about that night's show, and 6:30 pregame, 7 o'clock game. And the way things are going this year, 7 o'clock game means about a 10:30 or 11 o'clock postgame show, and they're long nights.
Man, and is there a better place to have a pregame meal than Target Field, by the way? I've been there.
Yeah, it's not bad normally, but the press room's not open yet. So, and it doesn't sound like it will this year, but no, normally not. I mean, they usually have a good salad bar and a decent dinner and a great room where we just sit, relax, talk a little baseball or whatever else is happening in life. And, you know, boy, every time you start to think about these things, I just keep hoping that yeah. life is back to normal when the hockey season rolls
around. The numbers are going badly. I don't think we're getting in the locker room at a minimum. Hopefully we can have like mixed zones. I don't know what they're going to do because the numbers are getting worse. And my biggest concern, Anthony, is like we have this NHL schedule out that we don't even know if it's official because we still don't know about the Winter Olympics, right? So they might have to redo the whole schedule. But either way, what are they going to do if all of a sudden we're in the middle of the hockey season and LA says, all right, you know, no live, you know, no people in here, and they change. Yeah, I guess what I'm saying, to put this more succinctly, is what are they going to do if different jurisdictions around the country start to, you know, pull back again? Or the border in Canada closes to NHL teams? Like, they're going to have like some contingency plans here on how to get the season done, you know?
Yeah, I agree. But I also think with the way they were able to manipulate things last year, I have some faith that they'll figure it out. They'll find a way to make it work. And, you know, I'm just glad we're not the ones who have to deal with that.
Yeah. Last question. Lucky asked, what city are you most excited to get to visit again while on the road with the Wild? Anthony, I'll let you go first.
I've always said my favorite cities are the Eastern U.S. cities. So, I'm anxious to go back and spend an evening in New York or Boston, yeah. You know, one of the, assuming again, what's strange is like, I've had some friends that have gone, hey, we're going to this city. What would you recommend? And I'm like, it's been 2 years since I've been there. This is what pre-COVID, this is where I love to go, mm-hmm. but I don't have any idea if these restaurants are still open or what life is like, you know? So assuming that everything is as it used to be, that's where I'm anxious to go back. I mean, you know, going to Vegas, going to Nashville, all that's fun, but I'm anxious to just go back, have a night in Boston or New York where you go have an awesome dinner and just kind of bum around in one of those classic old Eastern U.S. cities.
Yeah, no doubt about it. I'm
sure yours is Vegas, but
well, no, I'm going to Vegas next week. Mine would be Vancouver. I love that place. And you know what? I'm really, really excited to get to explore Seattle. I've only been there really a couple times, so really excited about going to there. Well, thanks. This was a good show. Thanks to our sponsors, Profile by Sanford, Minnesota Propane Association, Chris Lindahl Real Estate, Aquarius Home Services, your local authorized dealer for Connecticut Water Treatment Systems, Kowalski's, and Bosch Law Firm. Anthony, enjoy the telecast tonight, and let's talk next week. So much coming out, there's nothing going on. This is what, yeah.